The headlines. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani urges the next U.S. administration to compensate for the wrong policies pursued by Donald Trump. Coronavirus pandemic keeps claiming lives in Europe as Russia and Germany register record new fatalities. And French police and people clash in Bordeaux during a protest against a new law banning the dissemination of images of police officers' faces. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says he expects the next U.S. administration to compensate his country for the wrong policies pursued by Donald Trump over the past 4 years. Rouhani said that President Donald Trump's failure to win a second term was a result of his wrong policies. The Iranian president said that those policies included issues such as the coronavirus pandemic and racism. Rouhani said Trump's foreign policies also contributed to his defeat in the November 3rd election. The Iranian president said that his country's policies are based on reciprocal respect and commitment. He said if the next U.S. administration respects this, the way would be clear to return to the conditions prior to January 2017. That is when Trump took office. Political commentator John Stepling believes that the U.S. approach toward Iran will not change in the long term.
I think that Rouhani's right, that Biden is going to reengage on the JCPOA in some fashion or other. He may back off the sanctions. But U.S. foreign policy, by and large, doesn't change. Given that a lot of the European allies want the U.S. to reengage with Iran, they want to be able to do business with Iran, there's going to be a huge incentive for Biden to bend in ways that Pompeo and Trump didn't. But that's probably short-term thinking. Long term, not much is really going to change, and Iran will continue to be stigmatized and unfairly singled out because Western foreign policy needs a villain, and right now that villain is Iran.
Leading a diplomatic delegation, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has visited Kabul to meet top Afghan officials. Amin Alami has more from Kabul.
In an official visit to Afghanistan, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh is seeking to boost ties between Kabul and Tehran via expanding mutual cooperation, mainly in terms of peace and security.
Security of Afghanistan is our high priority. We think that the security of two nations, Iran and Afghanistan, are very much connected to each other. So we think that through collaboration, through cooperation, we have to be able to secure a stable situation in Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman comes as many here believe Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and that is why players like Iran are struggling to keep their role in the country's peace and security.
Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and all regional players have developed new plans in line with their own interests. For instance, Daesh is replacing the Taliban in Afghanistan. The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman to Kabul proves Iran's effort to expand its role in Afghanistan's security.
The visit of Iran's delegation comes as Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan visited Kabul last week.
The recent political trips of Afghanistan's eastern and western neighbors to Kabul are a proof of importance of the country to them. That is especially at a time when insecurity is on the rise and negotiations are underway between the Afghan government and the Taliban to bring a lasting peace to the war-torn nation. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
The coronavirus pandemic keeps taking its toll on European countries as the number of fatalities and infections continues to rise. Russia on Wednesday reported a record 507 deaths in 24 hours. That takes Russia's overall fatalities to more than 37,500. The country's total cases are more than 2.1 million. Also on Wednesday, Germany registered a record 410 new deaths from the virus. That brings the country's total to nearly 15,000 out of more than 960,000 cases. Germany is expected to extend a partial lockdown introduced in early November. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has warned against relaxing lockdown measures too quickly. She says that there's a risk of a third wave of infections. Brussels correspondent Jerome Hughes says European governments are under tremendous pressure to get the economies moving again during the winter holiday season.
The problem now is that the authorities across the EU and in the UK, they're under massive pressure to try and to get the economies moving again for the holiday season in December when we approach Christmas. all the business operators, they want to be functioning. They say that this is the most important time of the year for them in terms of retail, in terms of hospitality. This is when they make their money, because obviously, you know, normally January, February, March, April, even May would be very quiet months normally. So they really need this season. And so there's a lot of pressure on governments. But the health authorities are saying, if you do that, if you allow things to reopen, if you allow people to congregate together in these colder conditions with lack of ventilation indoors where the virus loves to spread, then we could potentially have a catastrophe in January, you know, the middle of January, when we see hospitals becoming overwhelmed. And of course, there is a concern as well that with the here in the EU, three working vaccines likely in the next couple of weeks, there's a concern that there's complacency setting in, that people think, oh, well, the cure is on the way, and so we can relax. So all of this is making health authorities very concerned that what we're leading up here to and what we're building up to, you see restrictions being relaxed in the UK, for example, on the run-up around the end of December. So there's a big concern that we're going to see the results of that, then very negative impacts in January, and that is a major concern.
Taxi drivers have brought the Spanish capital to a standstill during a protest directed at the government over worsening working conditions due to the coronavirus crisis. Thousands of taxis formed a long queue around Madrid's famous landmarks, clogging the streets while honking. Taxi drivers complained that the local government had taken no heed to their demands. While expressing anger over policies, they urged local authorities to regulate the transport sector so that less taxi drivers work at the same time. The taxi sector is struggling with a declining demand since the start of the pandemic due to restrictive measures. Spain is one of Europe's worst-hit countries by COVID-19. Like many other nations, the country's economy has suffered terribly due to the pandemic. Clashes have broken out between police and protesters in the French city of Bordeaux. The demonstrators set fire to trash cans, smashed store windows, and tagged walls. The protest was the latest in nationwide demos against a new security law. The proposed legislation would criminalize the dissemination of images of police officers unless their faces are blurred. Those found guilty would be imprisoned or receive fines. Activists have denounced the law as a violation of press freedom. The excessive use of force by French police has come under scrutiny. That came after a series of incidents were captured on video and shared on social media platforms. The British Prime Minister has reiterated that London does not want to extend the current Brexit transition period. Boris Johnson said that he will not be asking for more time to negotiate a post-Brexit trade deal with the European Union. The Premier, however, urged the bloc to accept the reality that his country must control access to its waters if the two are eager to make progress in talks on fisheries. Earlier, the head of the European Commission warned that any post-Brexit trade agreement with London must not hurt the EU's single market.
With very little time ahead of us, we will do all in our power to reach an agreement. We're ready to be creative, but we are not ready to put into question the integrity of the single market.
Ursula von der Leyen said that the EU is prepared for a no-deal situation after the December 31st deadline. She urged London to accept what she called fair trade rules. Britain withdrew from the EU in January and is now in a transition period. Two sides are at loggerheads over the future of the trade ties as some issues remain unresolved. As EU leaders are considering to impose more sanctions on Turkey over Eastern Mediterranean dispute, Turkey says that it will not give in to what it calls double standards amid months of tensions with Brussels. Russian Sagalam has more from Istanbul.
As the European Council is set to convene in December to discuss the tensions with Turkey, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called for dialogue, but warned the EU not to become a tool for enmities during escalating tensions over the Eastern Mediterranean. In his latest statement on Turkey-EU ties, Erdogan said Turkey sees its future in Europe and mentioned Turkey's post-pandemic plans to improve judicial infrastructure and strengthen the economy and other reforms.
We see ourselves as an inseparable part of Europe, with which we share 600 years of historical bond. We are calling on the EU to create a closer bond with us, to keep their promise of full membership for Turkey. We see ourselves in Europe, not anywhere else. We aim to build our future with Europe.
Observers, however, say Turkey does not stand any chance to become an EU member despite all negotiations.
Turkey.
In my opinion, the EU does not see Turkey either as a partner or a possible member of the bloc. For the EU, Turkey is only a trade ally. This means that neither now or in future, Turkey will not get closer to becoming an EU member.
Earlier this week, the EU's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, said Turkey isn't sending positive signals and needs to change its attitude fundamentally regarding the hydrocarbon dispute with EU members Greece and Cyprus in the Mediterranean Sea. European leaders say they will watch for Turkey's steps in the next couple of weeks before discussing any potential sanctions in their upcoming summit. Turkey is still a candidate to become an EU member. The bloc decided to effectively freeze accession talks in June 2018 over disagreements on accession terms. Many here are pessimistic about the future of accession talks, despite Ankara's ongoing efforts to meet the EU's demands. Meanwhile, some economists even warn that the accession could harm Turkey's economy. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Protesters in Thailand have once again hit the streets of the capital Bangkok in fresh rallies against the monarchy. Demonstrators gathered near the headquarters of the Siam Commercial Bank to denounce what they call the secrecy surrounding the wealth of the royal family. The Thai king is said to be a major shareholder of the bank. Police have already summoned 12 of the protest leaders over the royal defamation. Thailand has been rocked by a youth-led movement since July, with protesters demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha, changes to the constitution, and curbs on the powers of the monarchy. Some of the protests in the past also turned violent. U.S. media say President Donald Trump's plans to pardon his former national security advisor, who admitted lying to the FBI over his Russian contacts. Trump reportedly plans to include Michael Flynn in a series of pardons that he will issue during his last days of presidency. Flynn's secret contacts with the Russian ambassador to Washington was a key part of a probe into Russia's alleged meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Flynn pleaded guilty in 2017 to lying to the FBI about those contacts. He was fired by Trump less than a month into his administration. In May of this year, the Justice Department withdrew his case against Flynn. It said that his alleged lies to the FBI were not significant. Millions of Americans celebrate what's known as Thanksgiving Day. They mark this day to thank God for all the blessings that is provided to them. But this has all come at an expense. The rights and lands of the Native American Indians were violated and taken away, which is why for American Indians, it's a day of mourning.
People in the United States celebrate on the fourth Thursday in November as Thanksgiving. The event was first celebrated by the Pilgrims after their first harvest in the New World in October 1621. It's usually remembered and celebrated as the prosperity and the fortune that the first pilgrims found in the new land. But for the continent's indigenous people, Thanksgiving was just the beginning of pillage and the destruction perpetrated in the service of European expansionism and white supremacy.
The true story behind Thanksgiving was, after every killing of a whole village, these European settlers celebrated it, and they called it Thanksgiving. But it wasn't until Abraham Lincoln became president that it became an official holiday.
Native Americans were greatly affected by the European colonization of the Americas, and their population declined precipitously due to introduced diseases, warfare, and slavery. For the last 51 years, the United American Indians of New England have organized a rally and day of mourning on Thanksgiving. Native Americans commemorate the event as the National Day of Mourning. They say it led to the genocide of millions of Native people, the theft of Native lands, and the relentless assault on Native culture. It is a day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as a protest of the racism and oppression which Native Americans continue to experience. After the founding of the United States, many Native American people were subjected to warfare, removals, and one-sided treaties, and they continue to suffer from discriminatory government policies into the 21st century.
The United States was based on the colonization and the enslavement of indigenous peoples from the East Coast to the West Coast, all over the so-called United States. There existed civilizations of people who had lived there for for thousands of years. You're talking about the Iroquois, the Cherokee, the Apache, the Navajo, the Chumash.
It is important to note the crimes that the Founding Fathers of America committed against the Native American Indians, starting with this day. This was followed by centuries of oppression, racism, and genocide. And to this day, American Indians are still a victim, as evidenced in land grabs by U.S. companies. In order for the U.S. to compensate for the horrific crimes committed against these people, it has given special favors to their race, things like bank loans, college admissions, and employment, but this does not erase the bleak history of the sufferings of American Indians. Yet generations of Americans have been taught a one-sided history in homes and in schools.
Today, Native Americans in the United States belong to one of the most forgotten people who suffer from social neglect. It has long been recognized that Native Americans are dying of diabetes, alcoholism, tuberculosis, suicide, and other health conditions at shocking rates. Native Americans also suffer a significantly lower health status and disproportionate rates of disease compared with all other Americans. Native communities are impacted by some of the worst health outcomes of any race in the United States.
While the United States likes to claim that there are human rights abuses around the world of indigenous peoples, they claim that people around the world are being mistreated by their governments in order to develop. The U.S. is doing that very same thing here in the United States, in Louisiana, on the Gulf Coast. They tried to construct a pipeline to the Gulf Coast. In the Dakotas, they did the same thing. And there's so many different ways in which the U.S. government is allowing corporations to exploit indigenous lands, to destroy them.
Poor health amongst Native Americans is caused by many contributing factors, including high rates of poverty, isolated geography, poor education and nutrition, inadequate sewage disposal, and unhealthy living conditions. The serious issues with mental health among Native Americans are closely linked to other risk factors like high rates of violence, assault, and abuse. Lack of educational opportunity for Native Americans is a serious challenge that has impacted the success and health of Native communities for the long term. Much of this hopelessness is related to the poverty and lack of economic opportunity offered to Native American kids on reservations. Native Americans have the highest unemployment rates across the country, and Native Americans have the highest poverty rate at 27%.
And those are some of the poorest and hardest hit areas in the country today. And so the United States, from its very inception, has marginalized, oppressed, and destroyed and killed indigenous peoples.
On some reservations, up to 85% of people are unemployed. It's been suggested that outgoing President Trump's rhetoric has emboldened the right-wing violence against Native Americans. Back in 2019, a group of young Trump supporters were filmed mocking a Native American leader in the state of Kentucky. The confrontation was interpreted as a symbol of rising violence against the Native population in the U.S.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
In the limelight.
Through the late spring and summer, the GOP apparently hoped the coronavirus pandemic would simply vanish and the tens of millions of unemployed Americans would all be able to return to work. Opposing expanded unemployment systems, U.S. senators such as Lindsey Graham argued that support-oriented measures would sabotage the labor market by providing people with disincentives to re-enter the workforce. Once it became clear that the pandemic wouldn't simply vanish of its own accord, the GOP pivoted and, embracing much smaller financial stimulus packages, reframed its opposition to the HEROES Act. As fiscal responsibility in the face of a Democratic legislative effort to use the pandemic as an excuse to fund all of the party's favorite programs. Thus, legislative stalemate. As a result, in the last weeks of 2020, absent quick congressional action and with the pandemic raging worse than ever, millions of Americans are staring into an economic abyss. Groups monitoring hunger and food insecurity in the U.S. have reported streaming spikes in the numbers of Americans who struggle to put enough food on their table. Earlier this year, that number was thought to be about 37 million. Today, it is 54 million, or one in six Americans. 17 million of these are children. Food banks around the country are reporting unprecedented demand. We now present you an article written by Sasha Abramsky, a freelance journalist and part-time lecturer at the University of California at Davis, under the heading, "Ever-growing millions of Americans face eviction and hunger. Will Congress act?" Please stay with us to hear more of Sasha Abramsky's article. Back in May, the U.S. Democratic-controlled House of Representatives passed the HEROES Act. It was aimed at delivering trillions of dollars of additional federal funds to support healthcare systems, unemployment benefit, housing assistance, nutritional programs, as well as money to keep cities and states, public transit systems, schools, and other vital infrastructure functioning. Since then, the House of Representatives has passed several updated versions of the act. And yet, with President Donald Trump and the Senate GOP hostile to federal programs that they misleadingly claim will benefit only blue states and cities, the HEROES Act has languished. Through the late spring and summer, the GOP apparently hoped the pandemic would simply vanish and the tens of millions of unemployed people would all be able to return to their work. Opposing expanded unemployment systems, senators such as Lindsey Graham argued the support-oriented measures would sabotage the labor market by providing people with disincentives to re-enter the workforce. Once it became clear that the pandemic wouldn't simply vanish of its own accord, the GOP pivoted and, embracing much smaller financial stimulus packages, reframed its opposition to the HEROES Act as fiscal responsibility in the face of a Democratic legislative effort to use the pandemic as an excuse to fund all of the party's favorite programs. And thus, we had legislative stalemate. Thank you. As a result, in the last weeks of 2020, absent quick congressional action and with the pandemic raging worse than ever, millions of Americans are staring into an economic abyss. Somewhere in the region of 12 million people, millions of them temporary workers who don't qualify in normal times for unemployment benefit, and millions more who are considered to be long-term unemployed and who, again, in normal times would have maxed out their unemployment benefits, will lose their financial lifelines next month. However, unpack the economic morass and the predicament of low-income Americans is far worse than just a congressional inability to extend COVID-era unemployment benefits. The last 9 months have peeled back the veneer of a society so vastly unequal, both as compared to earlier moments in U.S. history and as compared to every other advanced industrial democracy on Earth today, that it no longer has either the ability or the will to do right by those at the bottom of the economic pyramid. 3 billionaires now possess the same amount of wealth as the bottom half of the U.S. population. Meanwhile, somewhere in the region of 13 million American households that rent their homes at risk of eviction once eviction moratoriums end over the coming months. If this tsunami of evictions does occur, it will be on an even larger scale than the housing displacement that followed the 2008 financial collapse, and will add to a homelessness crisis in America of a magnitude no other developed country comes close to experiencing. Of course, it's not only on the housing front that low-income Americans are at risk. Over the past 4 years, despite low unemployment numbers prior to the pandemic, many of the health insurance coverage advances that occurred after the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010 were rolled back by a relentless Trump administration campaign to sabotage the Affordable Care Act. According to Kaiser Family Foundation estimates in 2016, 26.7 million Americans were uninsured. By the end of 2019, that number had grown to 29.2 million Americans. This was still far lower than the 46.8 million uninsured at the time of the Affordable Care Act's passage, but the warning signs are clearly visible. There has been a recent acceleration in the number of uninsured Americans. In fact, several think tanks and healthcare advocacy groups have estimated that the longer the pandemic lasts, the more American families will lose their health insurance. The estimates range from a low of nearly 3 million workers losing their health insurance as they lose their jobs to a high of 8.5 million people ending up uninsured. Making this health situation even more precarious, groups monitoring hunger and food insecurity in the United States have reported extreme spikes in the numbers of Americans who struggle to put enough food on their table. Earlier this year, that number was thought to be about 37 million. Today, it is thought to be 54 million, or 1 in 6 Americans. 17 million of these are children. Food banks around the United States are reporting unprecedented demand. But the crisis goes far beyond these statistics. Precarious access to housing, to medical care and food is magnified by structural crises and the environments that poor Americans live in. From one city to the next, absent a congressionally funded rescue package, public transit systems, which are disproportionately relied on by poor people and people of color, are collapsing in on themselves. In New York City, for example, the MTA is proposing unprecedented cuts, which will likely lead to nearly 10,000 fewer transit employees and a 40% reduction in services. In San Francisco, California, many bus routes have been permanently cancelled. In Los Angeles, California, which invested billions of dollars in a new subway system over the last decade, trains and bus routes are being slashed around the city. And from one state to the next, because of a lack of new dollars flowing in from Congress, legislators are pushing stark cut-to-the-bone budgets for K-12 schools and for public higher education institutions. After-school programs and special education programs are being stripped down to bare essentials. Again, disproportionately, these impact lower-income residents who are most reliant on state services and least able to seek out alternatives once those services start to fail. Educational inequality has been worsened by the fact that insufficient support has been provided for low-income students to engage in remote learning. Low-income children have the least access to computers, to internet access, and to space in which to study remotely. These crises ought not to be viewed separately from each other. They are overlapping disasters made far worse by US congressional dysfunction, with consequences that cumulatively will prove devastating to many tens of millions of Americans over the coming years.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Javdan. Please stay tuned.
Sen beri der murdi. Şeyh Ansari Resulullah aleyh.
There is a story about Sheikh Al-Ansari and the patience that he had in difficult situations. Once the wife of Sheikh got sick, it was near the end of the month and Sheikh had no money left to spend for treatment of his wife. Now, we all know that Sheikh Al-Ansari was in charge of the house of his time and he was responsible for the payment of the monthly salaries to the clerics of the Hausa. He could easily pick the money from the fund box of the Hausa and spend it, and then lend it back at the start of the next month. However, he considered himself the same as others and did not consider for himself a special share. This was the time when he could borrow money from the fund box of the Hausa, which he himself was its owner, and then put the money back in its place without anyone knowing it. Sheikh Al-Ansari thought to himself and told himself, I must not do this because I don't know what will happen to me till tomorrow. Maybe I die and remain indebted to the Hausa and others. This is how the great men of Allah show patience in difficult situations. People like Sheikh Al-Ansari are concerned even about the most trivial points in their lives. The reward for such people, as Allah promised, is surely heaven. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Jafdan. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
in the limelight.
Throughout his time as U.S. Senator and Vice President, Joe Biden was notoriously pro-war. He's expected to surround himself with a cadre of right-wing hawks. Former third-ranking U.S. War Department official, its highest ever ranking woman, co-founder of the Neoconservative Center for a New American Security, War of Terror backer Michelle Flourney is expected to be named Biden-Harris regime war secretary. According to Bloomberg News, on Sunday, 22nd of November, Tony Blinken, longtime Biden foreign policy advisor, is expected to be named as the incoming Secretary of State. Blinken, Flourney, and Joe Biden backed all U.S. new millennium preemptive wars on non-belligerent nations, threatening no one. Perpetual war under phony pretext of supporting world peace and stability appears to be taking shape as one of the centerpieces of the presumptive Biden-Harris geopolitical agenda. We're prepared for you an article written by Stephen Lenman, a Chicago-based author, research associate of the Center for Research on Globalization, and host of the Progressive Radio News Hour. The piece is titled Biden Surrounding Himself with a Cadre of Right-Wing Hawks. Please stay with us for more of Stephen Lenman's article. Throughout most of the Second World War period, permanent war on invented enemies has been official U.S. policy. Since Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States, involved this country in the First World War, Democrats have been notoriously more belligerent than Republicans. Bush the First, Bush the Second, and Dick Cheney, major exceptions. Unlike most other Democrats, Jack Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, transformed himself from a warrior to a purported peacemaker. He opposed Pax Americana, or American imperialism, supported nuclear disarmament, normalization with Soviet Russia, and respect for Palestinian rights. For these and other reasons, the CIA eliminated him on 22nd of November 1963. Pro-war Lyndon Johnson replaced Kennedy. A decade of Southeast Asia quagmire followed. Throughout his time as U.S. Senator and Vice President, Joe Biden was notoriously pro-war. He's expected to surround himself with a cadre of right-wing hawks. Former third-ranking U.S. War Department official, its highest ever-ranking woman, co-founder of the Neoconservative Center for a New American Security, War of Terror backer Michelle Flourney is expected to be named as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris administration's new Secretary of Defense. According to Bloomberg News, on Sunday, 22nd of November, Tony Blinken, longtime Biden foreign policy advisor, is expected to be named as the new Secretary of State. Blinken and Flourney and Joe Biden backed all U.S. new millennium preemptive wars on non-belligerent nations threatening no one. Perpetual war on a phony pretext of supporting world peace and stability appears to be taking shape as one of the centerpieces of the presumptive Biden-Harris administration's geopolitical agenda. Wars by other means against China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, and other nations unwilling to subordinate their sovereign rights to U.S. interests are also likely to continue endlessly. Blinken and Flourney co-founded political strategy firm West Exec. Blinken was Vice President Biden's national security advisor from 2009 to 2013. He was Barack Obama and Joe Biden's deputy national security advisor from 2013 to 2015. From 2015 to 2017, he was deputy secretary of state. Time and again, he argued for tough diplomacy. If unable to achieve compliance with U.S. demands, he said military action is possible. An advocate of American exceptionalism, the indispensable nation, he said the following weeks earlier. On leadership, whether we like it or not, the world just doesn't organize itself. The U.S. always played a lead role in doing a lot of that organizing, helping to write the rules, to shape the norms and animate the institutions that govern relations among nations. Blinken said, when we're not engaged, when we don't lead, then one or two things is likely to happen. He added, either some other country tries to take our place, but probably not in a way that advances our interests or our values, or no one does. And then you get chaos or a vacuum filled by bad things before it's filled by good things. Either way, that's bad for us. Before the election, Tony Blinken said if Biden is elected, the first thing we have to dig out from a strategic deficit that Donald Trump has put us in, adding the incumbent helped China advance its own key strategic goals. A Democratic administration will step up Taiwan's defensive capabilities. We need to focus on readiness for whatever may come. On U.S. relations with the Israeli regime, he said Biden-Harris administration would not tie military assistance to Israel to any political decisions that it make, period, full stop. Support for its apartheid rule, occupation and theft of Palestinian land, along with cross-border hostilities, will continue unchanged. Last summer, Tony Blinken and Joe Biden, if elected, will use the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, as a platform to try to build a stronger and longer deal working with U.S. partners, adding, the E3 countries and Brussels are likely to join us in trying to curb other actions by Iran that we find objectionable. Biden advisor Jake Sullivan called it impractical to think that the United States will provide significant sanctions relief without assurances that Iran will immediately begin negotiations on a follow-up to JCPOA agreement that at least extends the timelines of the deal and addresses issues of verification and intercontinental ballistic missiles. According to Bloomberg, is expected to be named presumptive Biden-Harris administration national security advisor. Linda Thomas-Greenfield reportedly will be named United Nations envoy. She and Tony Blinken were involved in earlier JCPOA negotiations that produced the landmark agreement. Now it appears they want it hardened, notably to include restrictions on Iran's legitimate missile program. Under the United Nations Charter and other international law, the right of self-defense is inviolable. Iran's military, Iranian missiles and other weapons development are solely for defenses purposes only. The country is the region's leading proponent of peace, stability, and cooperation with other nations. Its anti-war geopolitical agenda stands up in sharp contrast to that of the United States, NATO, and the Israeli regime. Hardline U.S. policies towards Iran are expected to continue at least largely unchanged if the Biden-Harris administration succeeds that of Donald Trump. In public remarks and opinion editorials, Antony Blinken supports the Russiagate hoax, earlier saying Trump's collusion with Russia's plans is really striking. Blinken claimed Putin managed to sow doubt about our electoral system. He managed to help defeat the candidate that he despised, Hillary Clinton. He managed to get the first national security advisor, John Bolton, fired. He added, every step along the way, either knowingly or not, wittingly or not, Donald Trump has aided and abetted this effort by delegitimizing our institutions and our leaders. Whenever hostile claims are made about Russia and other independent nations on the US target list for regime change, supportive evidence is absent, rendering them baseless.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wishes from us He said, first of all, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised to sustain us. And this is something that we know, something that we as Muslims should believe in. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also has given us the means to attain that sustenance, meaning that sustenance is not something that will just pop in our laps and we can just sit and, you know, do nothing and that sustenance will come to us. Yes, there are certain provisions that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us freely. For example, oxygen, the lungs, everything. For example, if you had to take all of this into consideration and think about the amount of blessings that Allah has given us for free, you know, it will require, you know, a lot of thanks from us. And this is why we say that no matter how much thanks we can give, we can never truly thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the acceptance of our limited thanks is again the kindness and the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In this tradition that we would like to share with you, dear brothers and sisters, today from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, it's quite an interesting tradition. Again, it needs to be taken into context that the person is asking regarding somebody who is capable of doing one of two things. It's not a person who can only do something like this, or only has the ability to do something like that, or, you know, is restricted in his choices. No, this is an individual, the Imam is speaking about, who has a choice between two things. The Imam was obviously telling that this is the better of the two things. So the Imam was asked by one of his companions about a man who trades, but he can make the same amount of money by working for somebody else. So the person here on one hand is independent in terms of risk, in terms of attaining his livelihood, and on the other hand he becomes dependent on somebody else. So the Imam then said to this individual, or to one of his companions, that he should not work for someone else. Rather, he must seek Allah's bounty and engage in trading. For by working for someone else, he restricts Allah's bounty for him. Again, as I mentioned in the beginning of this tradition, this is regarding a person who has the choice, who has the ability to do either of the two, you know, options that are on the table. And again, for example, if a person is independent, when the Imam says restricts, is that obviously if a person is trading, the concept of profit and loss, you know, is always there, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at certain times can increase him, or at certain times Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can, you know, also, you know, take away those blessings and challenge him a bit more, if you like to say that. And obviously in this challenge a person is able to grow if taken in the right context spiritually as well. Hence we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that in our choices we choose the best and that which will assist us in gaining that sustenance, whether it be physical or material or spiritual, and more especially the spiritual side, in a better way. Inshallah, until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
The debate.